This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Okay, real talk. When did paying someone back become social media?
What do you mean?
Like, say I want to see what you're doing and who you're hanging with, and you're not posting about it on your story. I can just stalk your pay app and find out what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, that's weird. You do that?
No, I don't do that. I use Apple Cash. It's built into your iPhone, easy and secure. You can send and receive money right in messages and keep it between friends, and then use that money to buy something at a store with Apple Pay.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Maybe. Shh. Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio.
And we are doing our monthly book club. Yay! we have chosen a short story collection, and it is by a Palestinian activist and writer, Nahruz Karmat, titled The Sea Cloak. And if you have an opportunity to read it, you should. It is a very short but heavy read. Speaking of which, content warning, there is mention of rape, definitely death, war, colonization, and genocide. And though the stories are short, the book itself is less than 80 pages. The words are profound and powerful. There are some stories that had to be read by me a couple of times for me to get the depth and the meaning behind it. I even had to do some research. Still didn't quite get a lot of some of it, rather. And speaking of which, being completely transparent, there's a lot of things I do not know about the Palestinian culture or even the area. I do know the gist of it, and it was not so long ago that I even began to understand the depths of what is happening in the Gaza area. So some of the context in the stories were unfamiliar to me, but it is still a powerful story and the conversation of not only the state of what is happening there and the mass genocide and displacement, but also the need for gender equality and protection. Just also, this book was published in 2019. And yes, it has won several awards. It is also a translation. So with that translation, mm-hmm. much like our feminists around the world, we're going to try our best with pronunciations. There are going to be mistakes that we make, probably some romanization English translations and pronunciations that is not completely correct. If you understand the correct pronunciation or of those origins and you want to correct us nicely, that would be lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know. So, but yes, there's a lot happening. And of course, we always want to highlight those who have been working to create change and speak out. And this is one of those books that does talk about a lot of the ins and outs and the ugliness of what is happening there. And by the way, here's a bit about the author, Karmat herself, from the Common Press, which is what the press that was used for the book, the release of the book. Nahruz Karmat is a Palestinian writer and activist born in Damascus in 1984 as a Palestinian refugee. She returned to the Gaza Strip as part of the 1994 Israeli-Palestinian peace agreement, where she now lives. I don't know how dated this is, so. She graduated from Al-Azhar University in Gaza with a degree in economics. She at the time of this publishing, worked in the Ministry of Women's Affairs, raising awareness of gender issues and promoting the political and economic role of women in policy and law, as well as the defense of women from abuse and highlighting the role of women's issues in the media. Her political, social, and literary articles have appeared in numerous newspapers, magazines, and online. She has also written screenplays for several short films dealing with women's rights. She's a social activist and a member of several youth initiatives campaigning for social change in Palestine. I don't know where she's at today. I think she does have some social media. So not sure what she's up to with what is happening since she was a resident of that area. So we'll try to look into that later. So for this, we are going to go story by story, as each story is an independent unique tale, with a small excerpt of each story, if we can find it. Some of them are so small and so just intense, we might not have one. We'll just give a brief explainer, and then we'll discuss the themes as we go. So per book, we'll discuss about it, because obviously we can tie it all together at the end, and we probably will. But with short stories, we like to give attention to each one. So we are going to start with the first story, The Sea Cloak, which is the title of the actual book. And the story is of a young woman going with her family to the beach, and she nearly drowns because of the amount of clothing that binds her in the water, but is rescued by a stranger. Here they look at not only the implications of what the women and the young girls have to wear, but her interactions with boys in general, in which she is chastised at the beginning of the story for flirting with a young boy. And then because she was chastised then, she is afraid of being chastised again after being touched by the man who rescued her from drowning, which he doesn't get chastised. He gets thank you so much for rescuing her. But it is an interesting interaction between her mind and figuring out, oh God, did I do something wrong, versus her life, essentially.
Right.
And here's a quote from the story. "That is just the way Gaza is, a young girl yet to learn the art of elegance, a young girl who has not yet developed her own scent and is still willingly or not perfumed by all around her." And in that context, she's talking about being affected by the culture, by ideals and traditions and rules of the place, as well as the fact people's own assumptions of her. I thought it was very pretty. The entire book is beautiful, just an FYI, and very poetic, and sometimes really very deeply thought-provoking, which meaning like, what the f*** did that just say? Type of level. And I've had to backtrack. I'm like, what just happened? And here's another quote. "She drifted toward, carried like a mermaid by the breeze, her thoughts entirely immersed in the waves before her. Time was stealing her steps away, and the sea, without her realizing, had already snuck into her memory." And it was just such a vivid line about how memories are created in that moment. And you know, when you are there, this, like, this is going to be one of those things that think on forever. And it was like, it's a gorgeous, like, look, as well as, like, right before, oh my God, I think I might die moment for her.
Yeah. I found that a lot of the, so much of the environment was described so well, and so much of the water specifically, like the sea, the feeling of the sea, even if you're not necessarily near it, but just like this in the air, you can feel it. The author really painted a great picture of the area, the environment. And that's shown through in that one. The next story is called Black Grapes. And this is about a friendship between a Palestinian and a Jewish settler. A man is trying to provide for his family, including his mother, who owns a land with grapes growing on it, but it's not really doing well. So he works for a man named David, who defends him against others that insult him. His name is Hamoud. But after a small argument over wages and labor, is overheard by a bystander, kind of an annoyed bystander outside. Hamoud is shot after someone called in saying that he was a terrorist. And that one's sort of a circular, like you start at the end and then get the painting of what led up to that moment. And yeah, it was upsetting because they at least had somewhat of an amicable relationship. And then this guy was just annoyed and called in. I mean, he did overhear some stuff, but he definitely was, like, annoyed and called in.
He took an opportunity, but the kind of the bigger theme of that, and I think one of the things she was leading to, was the power that the Jewish settler had, David had, over the situation, just because he said the word terrorist and that was enough to get him killed without mm-hmm. any other conversations. And then, of course, he regrets it and literally, like, screams. He didn't get paid. Like, that's all he kept saying. Mm-hmm. And it's heartbreaking because, you know, the father's lost, the mother. We left a lot of this out because it's such a succinct story. Mm-hmm. That it was just a lot, but like talking about trying to take care of the mother, her mother refusing to give up the land, even though David really is trying to get that land. And then that's a kind of a big implication of the story in general between the Jewish settlers and some of the people who come through that area versus the Palestinians who live there. So, yeah, definitely a lot. Mm-hmm. The next story is The Mirror. We see a woman named Layla and her niece Dahlia pretending to watch TV. And this is, again, one of those that I had to come back and read twice because I was like, what just happened? Pretending to watch TV in a mirror with a key fob. I'm thinking they're at a refugee camp. I can't quite grasp what's happening because it's not, or just a ruined, desolate building.
Right.
And so they sit pretending to watch TV. The niece gets excited, tries to get her aunt to come down. And which, y'all, yeah, obviously my heart hurts. But as the young niece is using her imagination to remember her favorite TV show and character, we read, have a throwback to a harrowing incident of Layla being raped as a child and her trying to protect herself and her niece from that type of darkness in general. During the time of that incident, Layla had her own favorite character, much like Dahlia, and she used her favorite character as a way to protect herself. And here's a quote. She remains afraid of that staircase her entire life. She has nightmares for many years about the shadow that can make hands appear out of nowhere, grabbing her. But she always kept Lady close. Lady, who runs through green orchards, she remains Layla's favorite cartoon character even into adulthood. In nightmares, she too runs for the comfort of those green meadows, keeping the sunlight on her face rather than darkness.
Yeah. And that one was really powerful too, because I've spoken about that before too, about using fictional characters to get through dark stuff. So that one was really moving and painful. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
The next one is called The Pen in the Notebook. In this one, we see three brothers, Ayam, Asad, and Adam, who travel with their donkey and cart to collect rocks to sell for the day. And here we witness the daily lives of the brothers, trying to help their family. Karmat does a beautiful job showing their life as they travel through the town and then back into their home. And she ends the story in a way that shows how the warmth can be felt with their family. And here's a quote about that. The warmth of her body seemed to restore them from the chill that had crept in since that evening sun had set. Ayam withdrew the crumpled 20-shekel note from his trouser pocket and placed it in his mother's hand. Her eyes glistened, and he gave her a kiss on the forehead. Of the 4 shekels that remained, he gave 2 each to his brothers. "Don't forget what I told you. Buy a notebook and a pen so you can learn to write like me," he said in his most paternal voice.
And obviously, this is kind of, I think this is a theme in general about the fact that the young children are having to play parents and yes. caregivers. The father had gotten shot by what they say is an American bullet and is paralyzed and bedridden. And so he's taking care of all of them. But one of the most important things that he teaches them is to write, that they mm-hmm. need to read and write. Yeah, so I think that in itself has its own big themes.
Yes, that is definitely throughout, I would say, children are present in most of these, yes. if not all of these.
Right. Mm-hmm. As we know, the majority, at least, I think like they said, 46, if not more, percent are children.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure of the numbers now. Then the next story is The White Lilies. The story begins with an exchange between a flower shop assistant and a man with a thick French accent talking about the area and about flowers for Mother's Day. And the flower shop assistant tells him white lilies are for Mother's Day, and the Frenchman buys that and leaves. Later, we find out that the flower shop assistant is an orphan teenage boy named Ali, who finds out that his neighbor just had a daughter, and he suggests naming her Zara, which they do. Zara is like a daughter to Ali, and he has been a part of her life. She's a sweet child who we are introduced to officially when she talks about mosquitoes that often bother her hearing and while she's studying, and how these mosquitoes can launch rockets as well as pesticides to, quote unquote, help the plants. And then we, in this conversation, talk about drones as well as a part of the mosquitoes. Her father tries to reassure her that they don't do the rockets. They're just there to help plants. And she is sent off to school reassured, where she waits for Ali. Ali is heading to the school to give her a white lily for Mother's Day. All the while, a man with a thick French accent that works for the military is ordered to neutralize the target after hearing the phrase, "The lilies have blossomed. Ali, it's time." And then we soon read Ali is blasted / knocked down and killed in front of Zara, who gets a part of that blast as well. But she, I guess, is okay, who had been waiting for him to arrive in front of the school the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the next story is called Our Milk. We learn of 2 different instances, one occurring in 1946 and another in 2001. The scenery begins at an elegant restaurant with a young blonde woman waiting for her milk as part of her breakfast. But as she waits, an explosion occurs, killing her and many others. Jump to 2001. A young man is being driven to an area with a ukulele case and a camera bag. He is dropped off downtown at a cafe named Zabaros. There, with a young boy and his mom, a worker and another customer, a bomb goes off. And here is a quote from that. "As the kitchen clock ticks noon, the white sauce sprays upwards, mingling for a frozen nanosecond with the red. The little boy with freckles daydreams for the last time about learning the guitar. The old man taps his foot to one last beat. The woman with the long legs takes her last sip of orange juice in a tornado of spaghetti and wood and stone. Tables fly and the roof collapses. Blood and bone are scattered in the dust. Of the young man's curious gaze, nothing remains."
Yes. The beginning scene really does make you think of, I guess it was before the official colonization /displacement in that area, but still obviously socioeconomic divide, with the whole like waiting for milk, being really annoyed waiting for that milk, which was a luxury at that time, mm-hmm. to her being bombed. And then flipping to the incident in which the journalist who had been reporting all these horrific things finally joins the cause / mm-hmm. joins the fight and delivers the young teenage boy to bomb the Sbarro's, which I'm guessing is the pizza place, because they do describe pizza and Italian food. So it sounds like maybe a connotation about English or Americanized restaurants.
But also just kind of that mirror of like time, mm-hmm. of like this instance and this instance, and how they kind of reflect each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we have 14th of June or June 14th. So here's a quote about the date that is the title. So it says at the back as a note. The title refers to 14 June 2007, the day in which Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas announced the dissolution of the unity government and declared a state of emergency. It occurred at the height of a battle of Gaza, also referred to as Hamas takeover of Gaza, which was June 10th to the 15th in 2007, which followed Fatah losing the parliamentary elections of 2006. Hamas fighters took control of the Gaza Strip and removed Fatah officials from the political and administrative positions, resulting in the de facto division of the Palestinian territories into two entities, the West Bank governed by the Palestinian National Authority and Gaza governed by Hamas. And the story follows a family watching the chaos happening around them as the city grapples with the current state. Trying to remain safe and protecting their homes. We see the mother trying to find her husband as well as trying to protect the daughters. An uncle involved somehow. It did a double take on that, so I was kind of confused. Here's a quote. Images flash through her mind like lightning. And this is the, I think this is the perspective of the daughter. How many times has she jumped out of bed thinking that a bullet has punctured her window? How many times have she and her sister thrown themselves into their mother's arms or huddled together at the foot of the bed on hearing an RPG mortar screeching towards the building on the square? And that's kind of the chaos that's happening, as well as men coming in and taking over places, as well as stealing things. But she's able to hold tight. She's able to keep her family fed, and she's able to hear from her husband to know that he's alive.
The next story is called The Long Braid, which is about a young lady who is proud and outspoken, even if she is scared or nervous. She loves to sing and dance and is willing to stand up against those who try to shame her for that. Here is a quote. This triggers, in turn, something else, and she feels tears stinging her eyes, like the ones she tried so desperately not to shed that day she was excluded from class. With each new sting, she writes down another word on a blank page of the notebook, a word that describes her love for her country, a word that stands in defiance of all meaningless symbols her math teacher put on the board that day. This episode might bring tears to her eyes later that night in her room, but she knows she has faced worse than this. Like the time he kicked her out of class for standing up to him when he said women who called themselves emancipated were sluts. She is proud of the restraint she showed that day, despite her anger, despite his humiliation of her in front of the other girls. She can feel the same tears prickling her eyes as she felt then. Tears she refused to shed for his ignorance. She left the classroom that day without giving him another look. The God I know pays no resemblance to the monster you rant about, she says with a smile, and proceeded to skip all the way down the corridor and out into the courtyard of the Zaytan Preparatory School for Girls.
Yeah, this was a beautiful story, I think. She does a really good job of making these young women or girls really strong. But at the same time, that fear that, like, you know this. You're so upset that you cry, but you know what you're saying is right. And even though you're crying, you're doing something brave.
Yeah. Yeah. And just feeling that kind of love of school or a love of dance, love of singing or whatever it is, and being told, like, no, that's wrong, and being like, no, I'm good at it. I want to keep doing it.
As well as, like, she loves her country and she's singing. And even though some of the old school thought is you shouldn't be doing that as a woman, she's like, but I love doing this. And this makes me more proud. I think there's a lot to be said to that as well. It was really, and of course, the long braid is referencing her hair. So there's that conversation. She doesn't really talk about the head coverings at all much, hijabs or anything. So I'm not really sure if she was implicating that or just like braids in general. But that is that conversation about her hair being shown. And he does make mention of that as well. Essentially, again, calling her a slut for doing such a thing, which I think was like a powerful statement in that itself. And the next story is The Anklet of Mayumas. I hope I'm saying that right. And in this story, that threads, quote, together the lives of young women. I got this from a review. together the lives of young women across centuries and their parallel desires and all those times and places for love, for freedom, for escape. This is one of those that I had to research because it is a lot. There's a lot to this story that jumps kind of all over the place, also involves the sea. And we get to have like that moment of like the sand and conversations about what that felt like, the smell of hay. Great, great imagery. The story flows as we see tales of love and art, as well as loneliness and anger. A young girl dances in a temple and watches as the sculptor works. A young man is working and digging for something we don't know of until the end. With the sea always in the background, patiently waiting with those who are looking or waiting for someone to come. Here's a quote. He remembers his girlfriend's tearful words to him. When am I going to break through that border? When will they give me a permit to come and see you? Other voices crowd his mind, like the sound of his father's voice. You don't have to wait for her to come. You only spent a few days in Gaza. How can you say you're committed to her? The situation has changed, son. They have stopped letting ordinary civilians pass through Erez. Our lives and our work are here. I build the wall and you build the settlements. Wake up from your daydreams, boy. There were the other sounds crowded his thoughts as well. Sounds he wished he didn't hear. Drums and whistles, the clamor of festivities surrounding his eventual wedding to his cousin. So much happening. And the story ends with him shooting, not him, one of the boy who had been trying to dig for something, shooting at a crowd. This talked about Israeli couples across the wall and border. So there's a lot, but there's also like this imagery of a woman dancing, a princess dancing with her anklet chiming, and then they compare the noise of the gunshot to the chiming of anklets. So yes, a lot there.
Yeah. And again, these are very short. Like it's a lot that
yes,
is managed to get across in like literally some of these stories are 3 pages maybe. So you really gotta pay attention.
Yes.
In a good way. It's great. Like the imagery is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's really, really powerful. But you really gotta focus.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The next story is called Breastfeeding. This is the story of a mother and daughter. Mother Yara dreams of continuing her education and going to school in Cairo, but at the age of 13, is told that she would be marrying her cousin. After having 3 kids and her husband just decides he wants a new wife. He says that Yara's mother was a mother to him as well, since she had breastfed him when he was younger due to the fact his own mother was too weak at the time to do so herself. He soon left Yara, but Yara continued her life and provided for herself and her family through sewing. So we later see Yara's daughter, Sarah, getting ready to get married herself to a man she had never met but talked to through the internet. She was excited, even though he was a much older man than her. She would be able to leave and move to Paris. She was excited about that. Later, she moves back with the child, saying that she was divorced and needed to come back. The marriage had not been good. He refused to let her leave and come home, and she was unhappy the entire time. Yara declared it would all be fine and that she would provide for them through her sewing. So here's a quote from that one. "With that sound, she knows what she will do. She will not despair or indeed look for a new husband. She will just sew, stitch and sew and tear and cut. The sewing machine's whir will ring in the ears of all of her children through all of the years ahead. It will drown out the sound of her own regrets, and it will keep the house together. As long as its whirring deafens them, they will not hear the bitterness of the mother that brought them into this world."
Mm-hmm. A collective sigh, but no, yeah, it was a powerful story because also she thought that she was going to get this opportunity to go to Cairo because she was a really smart girl. Her parents didn't want her to marry the cousin, but the aunt was very, very insistent. And then the daughter was trying to escape, thinking that she was going to have this amazing life, but was literally imprisoned in her own home because her husband would not let her out. And so she left after the baby, which was good to see that she could still return home. There was also the conversation of her not being able to leave at that time on time and almost came to a divorce because they had agreed to get married. I think they did get married, but they hadn't met. And it took them almost a year for her to leave because of all of the technicalities and the hardships that she had to go through in order to try to be able to leave in the first place. So that all happened. And then it ended up not being great for her either. But that whole breastfeeding thing, that was interesting because it also talks about like the fact that through the Quran, the clergy essentially told him, you know, if you've been fed more than 4 times, then yes, you could be considered like a mother to you. And I was like, huh, I don't know much about the Quran. So that was very new information. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's an interesting, very specific technicality.
Yeah. I feel like there's a bunch of those in religion where it's like 7 times and then this.
Fair. The Old Testament, I guess the Torah for some things, like essentially the same things. They're like, wow, that is real specific with those numbers, which is why I think 144,000 is the number for heaven. I'm like, that is also very specific. That, yeah, that's the call. Like the idea that it's going to be 144,000 chosen. And I think the son of Jacob is the idea. This is the whole like kind of Zionist ideas that's underneath that. But it is in the Old Testament. But yeah, it's very specific. It may also be in the Revelation. Now that I think about it, because it kind of takes from the Old Testament. Go back to the religious thoughts. We are in our final story, and I could not find Samaland. So if someone can tell me if it's Samaland or Samaland, the Samaland moon. And it's a story about Rima and Ziad, a young couple in love. And it's really cute to the first time they profess to each other to eventually becoming engaged. However, throughout the years, they have grown different with different opinions. After the death of Ziad's father, things had changed for both of them. Rima was more open, and Ziad became more traditional. After a heated discussion and a car accident, Ziad and Rima decide to go back to their spot by the water, but is soon targeted by an Apache helicopter, and their car is destroyed. However, they soon make it to their spot, where they declare their love for each other still. Here's a line. "For a moment, they lie still in the street, on opposite sides of the car, gazing across at each other through its burning undercarriage. The helicopter's searchlight lights up Rima's face for what seems like an age, until she starts to move, at which point it crosses back to the car, still on fire, then back to Rima. Once it finally sets off, taking the blaze cacophony with it, Ziad slowly gets to his feet and staggers across to help Rima up. They steady themselves for a moment and realize the streets are empty, just as the beach at the end of the road will be empty. And I think part of this is Ziad has gotten into something that he knows he has to leave. He's very angry about things that have happened, including what has happened to his father, and is not happy with the traditions being thrown out, while Rima is all about letting go of traditions. But it was actually a really sweet ending, even with all of that action-packed moment, essentially, to this, talking about friends and talking about how change and talking about how they still love each other, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of this story's had that kind of vibe of like tragedy and hope, but also definitely like children and loss of innocence was throughout. But it was really, I recommend it a lot because it really was evocative of like the environment, and I could like hear the sounds and feel the air and like smell the sea. Like it was a really set the place.
Right.
Very, very well.
They do a great job in making sure they reference any of the historical events and or terms that you might not know. Not all of it, but a good bit of it in the back. And I think it's good to note. It's also good to note that the entire areas that she's speaking of, I think, have been completely changed at this point in time. I had mentioned to Annie, we were talking before, that the hospital she mentions just was announcing that the entire ICU section had all passed away because they had lost electricity and water and power. So it's a lot of heaviness, especially right now, but it's something that we who are not involved or have not, do not have family or friends there, can't ignore. And I think many people say this, have been saying it, when you feel helpless, that the best thing sometimes that we can do, or the only thing sometimes that we can do, is to be witness to it so we don't forget it. And in these conversations, I think that that's important. The stories that she wrote, obviously, things were still happening then, tragedies were happening then, displacement was happening then, battles and deaths were happening then. And I think it's something to remember. She does even mention Hamas and what they did to the country as well. But I think, obviously, there's a bigger conversation to be had about how it led to that. Anyway, in all of that, again, like I said, I think it's important that we make sure we keep talking about it and not let people, not let it be forgotten, as well as being really careful of propaganda or conversations. And having literature like this is really, really important. And having conversations that she has led about gender equality and the gender violence that were happening and what has been happening throughout is really important as well, which she does a great job in talking about without preaching about. Because these are experiences that are very realistic.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely go check out this book. We highly recommend it. And as always, you can send us any of your recommendations. You can contact us at stephmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at Momstuff Podcast or on Instagram and TikTok at Steph Oh Never Told You. We have a Tee Public store and we have a book that you can get wherever you get your books. Thanks as always to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Steph Oh Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands.
not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.